Hello and welcome. My name is Gilad Berenstein, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the AI and Faith podcast. On this podcast, we're bringing together experts from our community and thought leaders from around the world so that together we can learn the key lessons required to build a world where AI benefits humanity and all of us individually.
I don't think the financial system should be any different than these other systems. To reach prosperity, growth, and optimality, we really need to have and value the contributions and the outperformance of people of all races and also genders.
Most of the time, we are fortunate to have researchers, academics, clergy, theologians, and all sorts of smart people joining us on the podcast. But today, I have to say, I'm personally very excited as we have two investors joining us for, I'm pretty sure, the first time. And we're going to have a conversation all about the ethical bottom line and specifically how we can bring AI into the world in a way that's both profitable for business, but also positive sum for humanity. And this is a topic I know that a lot of us have been thinking about, so I'm very excited to dive in. So let's get started. Thank you both for joining us. It is really wonderful to have you both on the podcast. And to kick things off, I'm hoping you can each introduce yourself briefly and tell us a little bit about what you do and what you focus on. And Jenna, we're going to have you kick us off.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's really great to be here today. I'm Jenna Nicholas, the founder and president of Lightpost Capital, where we do early stage investing and lower middle market M&A, all with an impact focus and a lot in AI. So a lot in climate and healthcare and the intersection with AI. I'm also the author of a book called Enlightened Bottom Line, exploring the intersection of spirituality, business, and investing. And originally from London and based in the Bay Area. And my whole career has been in the area of social responsible investing and really looking forward to the conversation today.
Absolutely. And Darren?
Hi, I'm Darren Dotson. I'm the managing director of Illumin Capital. And we're a private equity, venture capital, and growth fund of funds focused on the impact area. And also, we have a unique strategy through a partnership with Stanford to rigorously and through evidence address biases in evaluating asset allocation in our underlying funds and help our managers and partner with them to unlock impact and returns.
That is awesome. And I'm really excited to dive into both of those in more detail. But to start us off, Jenna, I'm hoping you can kind of set the table for us a little bit. What is the Enlightened Bottom Line? And when did you start caring about this topic?
So the Enlightened Bottom Line is really looking at how do we, when we're thinking about our investments and business decision making, not just focus on maximizing financial returns, but also having a social and environmental impact, and particularly considering the role of spirituality and purpose in that journey. And I'm part of the Baha'i community, and from quite a young age, I was really curious around the role that spirituality plays in shaping our work and our lives, and has kept having conversations with people that often say something to the extent of, I don't really feel like I can talk about it, but, and they'd share these amazing stories about the role that spirituality and transformative moments had played in shaping how they thought about themselves and their place in the world. And one of our mentors, actually, both Darren and I, when we both worked at the Calvert Funds, is the founder of Calvert, Wayne Silbey. And he has this incredible story of in the late 1970s, when he had first started Calvert, and at the time it was just a successful money market fund, he went to a Buddhist retreat. And at the retreat, they had them reflect on what it would say on their tombstones. And his reflection was, it'll say, the man that made 2% more than the next man. And he's like, this isn't the legacy that I want to leave. And so he went back to his colleagues at Calvert and inspired them to integrate social responsible investing into what they do. And it's now a $45 billion fund and really been a pioneer in the space. And so Wayne wrote the foreword of the book. And it's stories like that of how are we thinking about the role of these moments in shaping what we do.
I love that answer. And I love that anecdote, especially. I'm really into this concept of eulogy virtues versus resume virtues and how we all spend too much time on one, even though we really care much more about the other. So Darren, bringing you into this conversation, how do you see the Enlightened Bottom Line and how does that connect to your work funding overlooked investors?
I think the primary way in which the Enlightened Bottom Line orientation and thesis that Jenna lays out impacts Illumin Capital and the work that we do is that the primary idea is rooted in capital markets, which is the idea that through research, we discovered that the higher marginalized fund managers perform, the more bias they face. So we tested 180 asset allocators that manage over $4 trillion in capital and essentially found that the higher they perform, the more bias they face, which means that, yes, it's a problem for people that love financial returns and markets, but also it's a problem because the humanity of people is overlooked and underestimated within investment processes. So right now, it's about 1.3% of $82 trillion in capital managed by women and people of color-led funds. And, we would offer that there's something other than random chance that leads to that dismally low allocation that is counter to what we'd expect to happen. And that one of the reasons is because when women and people of color outperform, they get invested in less. And that's sort of the research finding. Our other belief is that asset allocators who wake up every day to make financial returns for their beneficiaries and their institutional strategies, when they reflect on their biases, that they'll also reflect deeply and realize that they don't want to inadvertently miss returns, and they certainly don't want to hurt the humanity of other people. We've seen that biases, because of the great research of Daniel Kahneman, has been shown to, when addressed, increase investment returns. But also, there's this deeper human condition that asset allocators can, if they overcome these biases, can get to know an entirely different group of people from a human connection standpoint. And that's one of the pillars that our firm stands on. Yes, we want allocators to reflect on their biases because we believe it can benefit their fiduciary duty that they sign up to pursue every day. And also importantly, we want them to do it because they have the opportunity to see the humanity of other people and help build a more prosperous ecosystem in the investing arena.
Absolutely. And this really reminds me of a conversation we had last year with some of our partners in an organization called Islamic City in LA that is training AI tools for Muslims to be able to use them in their own lives and their own practice of their faith. And they explained this difficult position that Muslims sometimes find themselves in of wanting to invest and to find personal prosperity, but do so in a way consistent with their faith and with their religious laws. And there aren't always managers or institutions or others who are able to do that. And I think what you're doing and bringing more people the opportunity to be managing funds, I think is not only great for the bottom line, like you said, but inclusive of so many more people in the world, which is really incredible. Now, before we dive a little deeper, I do want to go back to Jana for one more second to talk about the book. So I'm hoping you could tell us a little more about the book, maybe a couple of the key lessons we can get from within, and maybe one or two fun anecdotes you'd like to share.
Yes, no, thanks so much. So there's a framework that I present in the book that's very much based on interviews conducted with many successful investors and business leaders called the HEAL framework, which stands for hope, empathy, abundance, and legacy. And of course, folks have to read the book to get the full picture. But to just give you a couple of anecdotes that I really appreciated from some of the interviews I did for the book. One is an example I'll share, and it really ties into our themes of our conversation today. It was a company called Devoted Health. It's an incredible company in the healthcare space. It's valued at over $13 billion. And they have a practice that where they, before they engage with any patient that they're encountering, they're encouraged to close their eyes and imagine that the patient that they're about to engage with is a beloved family member. And it's such a simple practice, but they credit a lot of their success to the process of going through this very simple practice. And I think that it's something when we think about like how do we practically integrate some of these principles around spirituality and purpose into our day-to-day lives and work, of coming back to practices like what Devoted Health do. Or another great example from the book is a company called Seven Mindsets that's an education technology company led by an incredible entrepreneur, Scott Schickler, who's sold a number of companies in the past. And I asked him about this theme within the HEAL framework about abundance and how does he actively cultivate abundance. And he shared this example of as he's riding the highs and lows of entrepreneurship, that when he finds himself in more of a scarce mindset of thinking, he has a wand on his desk and he literally waves the wand And he finds that it's this really helpful exercise to cultivate more of an abundant way of being and thinking. And so I think about these small exercises that we can all do on a daily basis that help us to reground and what are we really trying to manifest.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more question about the book. You talk about the intersection of spirituality, business, and investing, and how often we overlook that. So, what are some ways that we can not overlook it? What are some ways that we can bring some of these ethics into our investing and business practices?
I think a big part of it is really creating the space to have these types of conversations. I think that's what's amazing about this podcast is sharing examples of how people are going about thinking about some of these themes. But I think about a company that we also talk about in the book called Innisfree Hotels, and both of the founders are dear friends, and they're also part of the Baha'i community, and they've built this very successful hotel chain. And they have spent a lot of time really looking at how to encapsulate spiritual principles into the core values of the organization. It's everything from no power plays and being aware of power plays and interactions, the importance of check-ins, of like checking your paranoid fantasies, like all of these things that really help to take what can sometimes be a bit abstract and make it really concrete. And they have that as part of their onboarding of all of their employees. They have thousands of employees across their hotels, and everyone that works with them goes through this process of really reflecting on these cultural values. And they really credit a lot of their success, as well as the retention of their employees, to the process of really encapsulating some of these principles.
Yeah, I totally believe that. And Darren, how do you see this? How do you advise people, or how do you think about bringing your own faith into your investing? And maybe any examples of lessons you've taken from your own faith that you brought into your business career?
Yeah, I'm also a Baha'i, and one of the Baha'i concepts is that there's a equality between men and women. So as I mentioned, with 1.3% of $82 trillion in the global financial markets managed by women and people of color, that's probably not equality. I think we can reflect on. So one of the things that, when I wake up every day and sort of look at the asset allocation strategy of Illumin Capital, we're waking up with a perspective that there may be value that indeed is part of the incredible contributions that women entrepreneurs have delivered year over year and decade over decade to help the investment portfolios of many of the largest companies in the world continue to perform. So that's one way when I look at the leaders of many of the private equity funds that we've managed to source that are continually outperforming, yet are not being allocated at the same rate as others. We take a double click, look at and reflect on any biases that we might have, and then allocate capital consistent with their performance rather than get caught up on what I would call like the parking brake of the car of investing, where I think a lot of investors, unbeknownst to them, like all of us, when we get in a car, sometimes we forget the parking brake's on, we're driving a little slower, we're not getting to our results as quickly in the destination we're going to. So we just ask that we stop, pause, reflect, and remove that parking brake from our vision of seeing opportunity in the global financial markets. So that's one way in which my faith kind of shows up in the work to make sure we're double clicking and capturing the humanity, yes, of the people that are presenting to us that may be a different gender, but also the market value that they're bringing to the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think about that from the Jewish perspective around the concept of the Sabbath or Shabbat, and the idea that, when we build businesses or invest in businesses in Judaism, you're not allowed to have your employees or your servants work on Shabbat either. So think about how do we build businesses where we respect the employees, where we make sure the employees can also have time for reflection, for faith, for whatever, and making sure we think about more than just the return, like you said. So I love those examples. Now, I want to bring AI into the conversation kind of more fully and ask effectively the same question we asked about profit, but really about bringing AI into the world. And as you guys know, as our audience well knows, I believe AI has so many wonderful promises for humanity and for humans individually, and so much good it could do in the world if we bring AI into the world in a way that's responsible. Like I always said at the beginning of the podcast, pro-human and pro-humanity. So I'm curious how you guys think about that, informed by your faith, by your own ethical traditions. How do we bring AI in a way that can be profitable, that can be great for business, but also in a way that doesn't sacrifice humanity and the ethics in our society to do that?
Yeah, I can share a few reflections on that. It's something I think about a lot. One of the core principles in the Baha'i Faith is the idea of the harmony of science and religion. And that very much this idea that, and one of the other pieces I'll mention is also that in the Baha'i Faith, we don't have any priests or clergy. So there's a lot of emphasis around independent investigation of truth. So certainly everything that I'm sharing here today, this is very much my interpretation as a Baha'i rather than probably the definitive, this is the Baha'i position on this. But when I think about this at the principle of harmony in science and religion, and as it relates to AI, I think a lot about kind of exactly as you were saying, that AI is a tool that we have the potential for it to have incredible impact in the world. And there's a company I had the opportunity to invest in through Lightpost called Evity AI that's led by this amazing entrepreneur called Dr. Larry Brilliant, who wrote a great book called Sometimes Brilliant. And he was part of the team that helped to eradicate smallpox. He led Google.org, deeply spiritual person. And they're applying AI to really advancing continuing medical education and providing more personalized medicine. And so, a really powerful application of AI for good. And then, on the other hand, of course, we see some of the challenges around energy use and data centers to program AIs and the challenges around privacy and this importance of, as we look at this state of the world right now, one of the ways that the Baha'i Faith sort of analyzes the world is this reflection on the forces of disintegration and integration in the world. So, we see in the examples that we were just sharing that many of the sort of challenges that we see in the world, and I think that applies, within AI too, that could be examples of the forces of disintegration. And at the same time, we also see these forces of integration of incredible companies that are being built using AI for good. And it's like, how are we actively cultivating these forces of integration and AI being a powerful tool in that, but ensuring that we have the development from a perspective of responsible AI and the consideration of questions around privacy and safety in that process?
Before we ask Darren the same question, tell us a little more about the harmony of science and religion. Like, that's a really interesting concept.
So my interpretation of it is very much this idea that we have with scientific development, and we see this with, across history, right? With the same technology that has led to a lot of innovations, also led to the development of the atomic bomb, right? It's like in and of itself, like technology can be used for both good or bad, but the power of science and religion together is that religion can provide an ethical framework for the advancement and development of science. And then similarly, there's times where religion can fall more into dogma, where it's not grounded by science, and that actually the power of being able to have each reinforce each other, kind of like two wings of a bird, that for the bird to fly, you need, both the rigor and analysis that comes with science, as well as the ethical principles and frameworks that can come with religion.
I love that. Later on in the season, we're having an episode all about this topic from a Christian perspective with an organization who I believe is called the Christian Transhumanist Society. And I apologize if I got your name slightly wrong, but I'm really excited to continue to explore that intersection. So thank you for sharing that with us. So, Darren, how about yourself? How do you think about AI coming to the world? How do you think about ways that we can make it profitable and successful, but also pro-human and pro-society?
I think that our work with managers that we invest into, who are leading in many cases venture investments, private equity, and growth investments into some of the leading AI companies within Silicon Valley and other parts of the world, are constantly thinking about the ways in which, through our partnership with addressing biases, the way that their biases might show up in data sets that train and inform AI, and that they can address it. For example, just within the space of education technology, we work with a number of companies that are deploying educational lessons, tutoring lessons, and things of that sort as a way that they can address some of these vast disparities in rural or urban students that are in healthcare systems as well. We know that doctors who wake up every day to make a difference in their patients' lives also have biases that, if their various different education technology platforms will help them to address as they're doing continuing education and other aspects. We can sort of get out in front of and help the results of those organizations be even stronger, get past those biases and increase impact. So those are some of the ways in which we think about AI. I will mention that in our initial study, what we did was we set up an experiment where a robo-trader was competing against humans in order to get the real sense of what people do when they're competing to achieve the best returns. And what we found is they went against their 30 years of training as financial investment professionals and would often get blinded from the incredible performance of those that were presenting and kind of hung up on race as they were deploying capital. So if we can help them slow down, address some of these biases, then I think the portfolios will benefit and they'll build a more inclusive financial system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is a wonderful vision. Now, one more question about AI before we pull ourselves back out and talk about investing a little more. And then, of course, about your own personal faith. How do you think about specific AI use cases, specific guardrails, as you look at AI coming into the world? And, you know, as you know, on our podcast, we're very fortunate that each week we focus on a different area of AI, different field or implication of it. What are you most excited about where AI you really see in the short or medium term could do some really wonderful things for humanity? And what's one or two things we should be concerned about? Maybe Darren, we'll put you in the hot seat first this time.
You know, I was just reading a study out of Stanford Law School that went pretty deep into if you have a black sounding name versus a white sounding name, and how essentially, if you ask ChatGPT, you know, what you should price a Corolla for, it gives you, you know, about a multi-thousand dollar gap if you're selling it and you have a black sounding name in terms of selling it for a lower price. So again, that hurts markets and it hurts people. So that's something that I'm concerned about. In terms of on the positive side, I really think that some of the areas in which AI can be extraordinarily helpful is in the deployment of education, where a single teacher, both black and white teachers, over suspend discipline and expel students at black students at higher rates than white students, about 4x higher rates. And if you have a system that helps them understand how they're treating students differently, what we found is that these teachers are not exhibiting a high mark on a prejudice scale, but on a bias scale, it's very high, which means that if they're trained or there's an intervention to help them understand where these biases are, they can really get better, and AI can provide a number of feedback loops in order to address that.
That's really good. I always think about that in employment, very similar to exactly what you highlighted. Of, you know, can we have AI that actually helps us reduce the bias or maybe takes away people's names or even like random things like where you went to college or things that people have kind of random alliances or bias against. I love those use cases because I also hope we can use AI to not increase the bias in society, but hopefully to actually decrease the bias in society. Jenna, a few things you're excited about, maybe one or two things you're concerned about?
Yeah, one of the things I'm really excited about is that there's a company invested in called Isuzu that is doing really amazing work in being able to use rental score data as part of the credit score assessment, which helps people that traditionally wouldn't have been able to access home ownership to be able to do so. And they recently raised around at a $1.2 billion valuation. So they've been doing really well financially, but very much using AI to embed into the ways in which that they're helping to support people on the path to home ownership. I think it's a really great example. There's another company I invested in called Trial Library that's using AI to increase more diversity in clinical trials. It's a huge challenge. So these really great examples of companies that are really thoughtful about how they're integrating a consideration of impact into their DNA and also doing really well at the same time. On the flip side, I think one of the concerns I have, you know, certainly is how do we make sure that we address this challenge around the energy use in how we're using more renewable energy sources in the development of AI. And then also, as it relates to us engaging with AI, I think it's just the importance that we don't lose the skill set around critical thinking. Like, I worry a lot about kind of the next generation that are raised, being brought up, and they're so used to AI as part of their day-to-day decision making, and the power of actually being able to take a step back and say, well, what do you actually think about this? Not just what is AI telling you to think about it, feels like a really important skill set. And kind of linked to that is also just ensuring there's obviously going to be big challenges and are already big challenges in terms of a lot of jobs becoming redundant. So how do we think about retraining and of workforce development as part of the ongoing integration of AI in society?
Amazing. I always say one of the ones that I'm personally really excited about is translation. I don't know if you've seen some of the new wearables, but they look almost like in Star Trek with like the thing that translates between everyone. And I always feel like some of the greatest conflicts in our world are because we don't understand each other. So I hope that AI can maybe help us understand each other a little bit better. But I love those. Now, two more questions, one for each. Darren, we have obviously everyone in our audience here is an individual in the financial world themselves. What advice might you have when selecting fund managers? What are just a few things you've learned over the years that make someone a better fund manager or maybe something to avoid?
Yeah, I think that having a consistent framework would probably be up near the top, and making sure that you track decisions over a long period of time, which is one of the, hallmarks of addressing bias. When we look at Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett, significant portions of every book they wrote was on tracking biases. I think this is a particular area in biases towards women and people of color that, I think asset allocators can be really thoughtful about. And if you look at your portfolio and there are zero women and people of color, which almost is, the industry standard by definition, since it's 1.3% of overall asset management, then digging deeper. I'm a fisherman, and I think that fishing is actually quite a spiritual endeavor. And one of the things that, I'm often surprised by is the diversity of fish in the ocean. They're all different types of fish that build a ecosystem and a robust prosperity within ecosystems benefit from diversity of all types of fish. They're female fish, they're male fish. When we look in the sky, there are birds of all different types. I don't think the financial system should be any different than these other systems to reach prosperity, growth, and optimality. We really need to have and value the contributions and the outperformance of people of all races and also gender. So just wanted to offer that as part of the way in which we look at the world, and we'd encourage others to sort of ask deeper questions. One of the most amazing things about investing to me is that we're numbers focused in almost everything we do. The idea that we would run rigorous analysis when we see gaps in markets of any type as investors is embedded in our training. But somehow the mind does not do the, as Daniel Kahneman would say, the system two work. And we let our reptilian brain trick us into suboptimal returns when it comes to race and gender, especially when there's outperformance. So that would be my offering.
That is excellent. Thank you for that. As that was a beautiful way to encapsulate the fact that all of us can make a difference with the way we allocate our own personal wealth and our own personal finances. That's exactly right. Now, Jenna, going back to the book just one more time before we switch subjects here. What are one or two tools or lessons that we can think about when trying to invest in both a positive some way and a way that, of course, honors our own faith and our own spirituality?
One tool, and this really builds off a lot of what Darren had shared. There's a professor at Stanford that Darren has collaborated with as part of the research that Illumina has done, Dr. Ashby Monk. And in addition to the research with Darren, also published a paper that I reference in the book related to some of these themes around bias and investment decision making. And he, in the paper, talks about the power of when investment committees, before they make the decisions, just take a pause, how much more effective the decision making is as a result. And so I think about what are the roles of pauses, and Dr. Jennifer Eberhardt, that Darren has also worked very closely with at Stanford, and we've had a chance to collaborate with through some of our joint work in Montgomery, Alabama, where we bring some of the investors that Darren has invested in through Illumin, as well as the investors that have invested in Illumin as part of that bias reduction work. A lot of her work, Dr. Eberhardt's work, is on the power of pauses as well. And so it's this really interesting thing of that so often in life, we're in such reactivity mode that actually just taking that time, whether it is before we make an investment, whether it is before we make a business decision, to actually tune into what is sort of our deep intuition saying, and then also being able to weigh in many different factors in that decision-making process rather than just sort of what is that spur of the moment way of thinking about it. So that's sort of one very practical tool to think about. And the story I shared earlier around Wayne Silby and this exercise of reflecting on what would it say on our tombstones, it's a pretty big question to be asking, but it's something that I find myself coming back to in terms of there's a concept in the Baha'i writings around the idea that each of us leaves a trace, and this consideration of like, what is the trace that we want to leave, and really investing that time into thinking about what is the trace that we want to leave, and what is the trace that this investment might lead, this business decision, and what do we ultimately want that, one line on our tombstone to say?
I just wanted to add to Jenna's point there. So much of Silicon Valley, where we live, is a move fast and break things culture. And what Jenna is saying, it's actually quite radical to slow down and add friction. And in the work with Dr. Eberhardt, is just profound to go into a technology company and say, kind of like what Einstein said as he was approaching some of the hard problems that he focused on his life. Which is, if he had 60 seconds, he'd spend 55 framing the problem and 5 seconds answering it. So we're trying to get back to some of those original framing ideas to make sure we're making the right decision, an informed decision, a high probability decision with all of the information that we have, rather than rushing through a decision that may be, an important allocation for beneficiaries of a pension plan or sovereign wealth fund or university endowment. All people trying to create capital that is growing in compounding ways for their constituents, and in some ways, if they don't pause, they might miss the entire picture of what they're trying to do and achieve. So I think that that is unique and different, and this idea of slowing down in a busy, increasingly fast-paced world through AI is so powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. And this is a really perfect transition. We've always spoken with all of our guests about the way they use AI in their own faith. But one of the things we're going to do this year on the podcast is really sharpen that view and really do it a little more explicitly. And we're really grateful for you guys being our first guests of the season with this new conversation. So I basically have three questions, and I'd love to know your own personal experience, your own personal use case, of course, from your perspective and faith as a Baha'i person. So my first question for both of you is, where or how do you use AI within your own personal faith or spiritual practice? Maybe Jenna, you can kick us off.
Sure. Now, one of the things that I really appreciate about using AI and really ties into one of the core principles in the Baha'i Faith is the idea that the underlying spiritual teachings of all religions are the same. And so, we're really encouraged as Baha'is to read different religious scriptures, to really learn about other spiritual traditions as part of deepening in our own faith practice. And so, just the ease of information and access to be able to really go on that journey of learning about other religions and paths. So that's one way on a daily basis that I find myself looking at different tools and scriptures to be able to learn more deeply in that way. The other concept that comes to mind for me is there's a line in the Baha'i writings that says all beings are created to carry forward an ever-advancing civilization. And I think that, particularly in this sort of juncture of where we are right now in the development of AI, that it has this potential to really be a catalytic role in the development of this ever-advancing civilization. And how we continue to keep in mind this lens around responsibility. And so I think a lot in both the investments I'm making and some of the examples that shared of investing in sort of AI for good companies, this consideration. But also in thinking about how we mitigate against some of the harm, like really bringing that principle to bear.
I love that. And I love the concept of the ever advancing civilization. That is awesome. Okay, Darren, yourself, how do you use AI in your faith?
One of the things that I found really powerful as a Baha'i and in life in general has been the orientation towards questions. These are prompts that guide life, if you will. And AI is set up in a way that sort of mimics that principle of asking questions. And as we read widely within the Baha'i faith, one of the people that I've spent a lot of time really digging into their background, history, and upbringing, et cetera, was Martin Luther King's mentor, Howard Thurman. And there's a chapel named after him on Howard University's campus. But Howard Thurman and so many people that experienced him, which I've only experienced him through his readings and writings and tapes and things of that sort, would say how wonderful it is to have a set of questions that would help them to dig deeper into their spiritual traditions, into their work-life balance, into the things and connections with the people that they work with, which may be interested in how they're doing and, what's going on in their lives. And so that this brief moment that we spend with each other in the human arc of existence is sort of brought into a conversation that is one without all the answers, but one that begins with questions. So I think there's something cool about the training of questions within the AI model that also is representative in that independent investigation of the truth that Jenna talked about as a Baha'i principle.
That's awesome. And you already started hitting on my second question here, which is, as you look a little bit further into the future, what are some of the ways that the Baha'i faith overall or the members of the Baha'i faith can adopt AI in the future? Of course, you don't have clergy, so it's not like a AI rabbi or something, but are there other ways that you could see it being adopted?
Yes, the one quotation that comes to mind to me from the Baha'i writings around this is like, man in reality is a spiritual being, and only when he lives in the life of the spirit is he truly happy. And I think a lot about this idea of, I think there's so much that we can learn from AI and deepen an understanding that actually the potential that it actually frees up some of our capacity to be able to have more time for deep spiritual encounter, which is very much in community and in real life. So I think that that's sort of this interesting thing of, my hope would be that we don't get to a point where we're, so intertwined with AI that we're no longer able to distinguish between, this reality that we're engaging with one another and the technological reality. But if I think that the potential of AI to be able to open up some of this capacity because of the efficiency gains that will come from it, that enables us to then, really sink into this like spiritual nature of our true reality where, true happiness and freedom can really come.
Absolutely. And Darren?
Yeah, I think that the idea of a shared storehouse of economics is something that is a powerful idea in the Baha'i faith, which includes concepts that might be, present in society, like ESOPs and employee ownership models, and ways that kind of extend off of some of the ideas that we've talked about rewarding employees for their contributions to society, their service, their representation of what a community can become if they, contribute above and beyond what's expected of them. And I think there's something really powerful about, when there is profit within organizations, how they think about being broader corporate citizens and being a steward of that profit so that there's an ability of people to participate in prosperity in society. We often think that governments are responsible for that. In the field of impact investing, where we're building return-oriented organizations, we also have a view that by investing in some of these transformative technologies that are taking on the forefront of health tech, ed tech, financial inclusion, looking at the pillars of transformative environmental models that are taking on some of these challenges, can really unlock impact in society and create more inclusive ways of going about that storehouse concept. So I would say although we often fall short, that's certainly a North Star to aspire to, a shared sense of wealth creation.
Absolutely. And then my last question is looking the other way around. For all of us building AI, investing AI, and ultimately bringing AI into the world, what is one or two lessons or ethics from your faith that we can learn to try to bring AI into the world in a way that's positive for all of us?
One concept in the Baha'i writings that comes up for me around this is the idea of the abolition of extremes of wealth and poverty. I think we're seeing this right now with, we both live in Silicon Valley, as Aaron mentioned, and here we're seeing incredible wealth that's being built from the AI boom and deep challenges in terms of affordable housing and what have you. So I think that there's one really powerful aspect is that as we think about the growth and development of the AI industry and how it's being really encapsulated in almost every business, having to sort of think about some of these topics, that it is leading to extreme opportunities for wealth. But how do we consider the ideas of economic inequality as we are building companies? And I think there's some really exciting things that people do. I was recently at an event by the Founders Pledge where people who are building companies that are actively from the beginning of building those companies saying that they're going to donate a percentage of any revenue that they have to philanthropic causes or integrating impact into the DNAs of the businesses that are being built. So I think that's really something that comes directly from one of the core principles in the Baha'i Faith. There's also the idea in the Baha'i Faith around work as a form of worship. And I think so often when we think about work, it's sort of something that people we do from 9 to 5, and then sort of worship is for something that's on a particular day of the week that's sort of a religious holy day for different traditions. But actually, this idea of doesn't necessarily just need to be when we're going to synagogue or a mosque or a church is that sacred time. But actually, in how we're building AI companies or how we're investing in AI companies, if we were to engage with this lens that like work is a form of worship, how would we be thinking about some of these decisions differently?
I love that. And Darren, close us out.
So I was thinking a lot about Jenna's last point there. And also there's a concept that art is a form of worship in the Baha'i faith. And when we take our investors and our fund managers down to see Bryan Stevenson's work with the Equal Justice Initiative through the organization we created, Impact Experience, one of the things that we feel the power of is the musicians that we have that are a part of every gathering and their ability to help us metabolize through their incredible gifts the experiences of slavery, lynching, mass incarceration, and the periods of history that really influenced the structural challenges that we're now trying to solve. We've married that with a curriculum so that everyone leaves with tactical things that they can do to leverage their insights and make sure that these things are not repeated in history. But we also acknowledge that it would probably be impossible to do it without the contributions of amazing artists like Eric Dozier, who's spent time with us, Delonte Goldston, both from different spiritual traditions, but both contributing, powerful gifts that enable us all to see ourselves as part of the solution, but also resonate with the past and be fueled to create change in the future.
I love that. I am so grateful to both of you for being with us today, and even more grateful for the work you're doing in the world and for speaking out about these important topics. Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing with us. We'll, of course, reference Jenna's new book in the show notes and encourage you all to check it out. And of course, thank you to all of you in the AI and Faith community for engaging with us and for doing this important work. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Stay tuned to listen to more conversations and interviews with experts from around the world. In the meantime, follow and rate our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends so they can join this important conversation. Don't forget to also follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for joining us.